God, you have demonstrated the strength of your perseverance.
Yes.
You are maintaining your place, yea, to the very end. I'm telling you, and the man you're going to mostly hear about from today is Dan Gary. And I'm very excited for you to hear what he has to say about the subject he wants to meet with. We're studying five scrolls in this lecture. Scrolls that are not particularly important. Ruth and Esther, Ecclesiastes, and some Psalms, Lamentations. One of the things that strikes me about these books is they're all a mix of profound and wonderful. They're not afraid to ask the big hard questions. Neither are they afraid to be the supreme. Marriage, sex, and family, house affair, politics. They're just really good to buy by them and they consider them a living part of them. Ordinary spiritual life. Dan is one of my people. He has spent a lot of time talking to people about money, about women, about the grit and the whistle. He's talked about family, he's talked about women, he's talked about faith, he's talked about money. And what he has learned about me has led to this little book we wrote together, where he suggests how we use what God has given us in terms of resources. How we use that in training our children. How we use that in teaching our children. How we use that in blessing our community. It's critical that we use the word of God. So I'm extremely excited about really hearing from the man who talks about such. It's close to his heart, and I want you to know that you are.
So Dan, let me turn it over to you. That was a better introduction. Tell me where you got your degree.
Well, I worked for Adelaide Christian University in 1973 and some more than another. And it was a lovely pizza, well, I knew something was wrong. I graduated in about 90% of my class. It was only after I got married that I finished my degree in my recent grades. But I do love what I do.
We want to talk about values, valuables, and the future of your family.
I am privileged to be married 46 plus years and have three sons who are Eagle Scouts. And that will help our eighth grandchild. Less than 2 weeks, Lord willing. Family is important to us. And by the way, if you leave your name, your email address or something, if you want a copy of this, then you can let me have that and I'll send you a copy of the outline.
How many of you know
a family who has been harmed by another one? Only one or two? No family of individuals who have been harmed by inherited wealth. For 20 plus years that I've been doing this, I used to sit down with individuals and ask them the question, I do estate planning works about 6 months ago. And I asked them, usually ask them the question, what do you want to do? I'll be willing because I've built assets before. If you don't wake up tomorrow, what are you going to have to do? We would put together a plan to move their assets from one generation to the next.
And in doing that, over the years, what I have found out is, and what I have witnessed, and funerals that I performed for the people, that we put their plans together, that they pass away.
And then I see what happens to their family 5 years from now. The kids are not talking, and the money is gone. And I know that it's not what it is. It's not what it is. So we begin to ask those questions. And that's sort of the subject of the book, and where we want to go today.
Why do you think it is that this happens sometimes? What are the reasons that the families break up? Don't talk.
Guilt is ruined. Lives are ruined because of your fault.
Pardon?
Jealousy.
Jealousy, okay. What else? We have a book that we give away in the office. It's called Who Gets Away More Joy About It?
I've seen families argue over the smallest things because there was no plan in place.
But why do you think it happened? My personal observation over the past 40 years of doing this class, we've had a limited focus. By the way, if you were to take a poll in here today and ask the question, you might do that. We ask, anybody here that does not have a current real or proper plan in place, practically
60-70% of the people who die passively every year do not have a plan in place. It's not that I hope you don't sleep tonight, but I hope you don't rest. You don't have some plan in place to move your future generations into the people. What a lot of these questions do. And only when you have that workshop with some of this, and I'm sitting a lot of stuff that I like to share with you.
But one of the reasons that one of the things that has happened through the years is people have had a limited focus on what it is. Well, we call it this. We just divide, dump, and dissipate what we say. What do you want to do with it? Just put a plan together, and if life is over for you, then you pass it on to the next generation. And that has been disastrous for most families. And it doesn't take much. One of the questions that we sometimes ask is, how much money do you think it would take to harm a child?
I've never had anyone say more than $100,000. And yet we give our children much more than that. And the other part is we just pass it on to the body, not just to make this thing, pass it on that.
Never really what it's going, what it's going to do to our children in the future, and here they go. What are the results? Traditional planning has failed to keep our families and our fortunes together for three or more generations, and it's been true for centuries.
This has been true ever since the beginning, almost the beginning of time. We have history on this.
Matter of fact, 2,000 years ago in China, there's a saying.
Did this one time, and someone quoted this to me in Latin. I wish I had many enough to quote it.
Wealth never survives three generations. That was 2,000 years ago. In 1300, England, they knew the languages fogs to fogs in three generations. In Spain, in the 1500s, trader to gentleman to beggar, three generations. My wife teaches German. She can quote you this in German. I cannot. When we before we married, I had to learn some German. I learned to say,
anybody who speaks German? I learned, had to learn to say, the best thing I did was the old German language.
Then we got married, and it was Jean Bullfrog coming, Doc. Yes, my lady. But in Germany, it's from shirts. In Spain, it's trade to trader, and then in Germany, it's seldom 3 cents continue good. In the United States, we know it as shirt sleeve to shirt sleeve for three generations. Or recently in Brazil, from the stables to the stars to the stables in three generations.
70% of families lose their family unity and their wealth by the second generation, 90% by the third generation.
It has nothing to do with geography. It has nothing to do with culture. It has nothing to do with taxes and economics. It has nothing to do with government. Those things don't matter. Families rarely keep their money and their families together for more than 3 generations. book written called Leading Divine Service. And that was the book that gave us the impetus through an organization called Brigham's Institute. So we began to understand that there's a faith element to this. How many families do you know that we lost our faith values on the fourth generation? So when Tim and I got together, I had the idea that he had the words. We came together and put together the book, Leading a Legacy, Sustaining Family Unity, Faith, and Wealth. How do we perpetuate the things we deem most valuable? One of the things that I will do with audiences sometimes when I conduct a workshop is pass out three or five cards. And I will ask the question. We'll ask the question. And ask you all, what is the most valuable thing you can give to your parents, your children, your grandchildren? What would it be? You can give them anything in the world, what would it be? They would love it. What else? As we go forward, 90% of the families fail to keep their. It works, usually works just like this. Three generations. Somebody makes it, it's passed down, the next generation didn't work well, they inherited it. And by the time it gets to the grandkids, they live in the credit park down the street. Obvious question is if that's what happens to 90% of the families, what would the 10% do that are successful? What would you think? Is that a man?
Yes.
Invest? Educate? Say?
Yeah.
And prepare? We just talked about this. What is the most valuable thing you can give to your children and your grandchildren? Another way I like to ask this sometimes, if you could somehow magically, 100 years from now, who would be here? I don't know. If you could look back on your heirs, what would you like to see them do? What would you like to see them involved in? Assisting the others in the church. We just had our 52nd Gary family meeting in my presence. Everybody's gone. The great kids in my dad's family, they're all gone. And my cousin, on his 72, I'm only in the presence. But our children are still, the second, third cousins are still coming together. Don't you want, would you like to know that your families are still here? That they're still loving each other, that they still share some of the same values that are important to you. Internal values. How can we perpetuate that? How can we do all that we can to see that begins to take place? Successful families share a number of traits, but these are the 10%. I have up here a white paper. I think I only brought 10 copies. You can have them as long as they last. If you don't get one, email me and I will send you. But here are some of the common traits. There was a study that was done by the Heritage Institute that said, okay, if 90% of the families lose the family unity and wealth, you cannot believe your faith value by the third generation. What will you do? And so the study was done, and there are 10 to 12 things that these families do. We won't have time to talk about all of them, but we'll touch on quickly the main Number one, they had a culture of communication and trust. They have a shared vision. I said at lunch today, they have a shared vision. They have a balanced view of wealth. And that includes philanthropy. I have to be honest with you. This is the thing that attracted me to this study. Because I've been involved in raising money almost all my life. Raising money for people in the world. So this was one of the things that the 10% families that they do. They have a balanced view of wealth, which includes philanthropy. They give money away together as a family. They train and mentor each generation. This study was done by the Zeke family, which is part of the Heritage Institute. Balanced view of wealth. We're talking about human capital. We're talking about intellectual capital, financial capital, social capital. What are we talking about? Human capital. If you have your health and your family and your talents and you got a good background, you got some wealth. That's part of wealth. On the other hand, if you have a intellectual capital, formal education, informal education, not all education is formal. Have good, great relationships, a good work ethic, spiritual beliefs. Would you, in great family stories, would you say that you are a wealthy person? Do you have a balanced view of wealth? We all normally think of wealth that when we talk of wealth, we think of terms of family. Money, capital. But it's not just financial. It's not just our investments. It's all these other things. Good citizens, neighbors, charitable giving, volunteer work. Comes from a sense of wealth. By the way, if you had to bankrupt one of these, which one would you bankrupt? If you had to bankrupt one, which one would you bankrupt? Why? Not as important. But if you have the other three, you can replace the power. You can replace the financial. You can't always replace it, can you? So, these families that succeed from generation to generation have a balanced view of their wealth. It's more than the dollars and cents and what we've got in our IRAs. I'll get back. There was a study done by the Office Exchange. Do you remember what happened in 2008? Well, the family office did a study. It relates exactly back to what came out of the study done by the Heritage Institute. And that is, they asked the people, what is it that you think is going to get you in the end? With all this stuff that's going on. If you look at it, investment strategy, 37%. Economy and financial markets, 26%. Financial constraints, 16%. About 85% of it had to do with finances and money. They said, that's what's going to tear us down. That's what's going to break us up. That's what's going to do us in. And then, after that, Williams and Pressman came along and got a bit of study. Said, okay, what was it that got you? What was it that really did you get? Williams and Presser found out that 60% of it was lack of communication and trust. How well are we communicating within our own families? 25% was unprepared heirs. 3% had to do with failures in the financial markets. 12% is everything else. So lack of communication and trust is the thing that's tearing our families apart, causing us not to be successful going forward for future generations. I would recommend this book to you, by the way. There's another book that talks about, I don't know if you remember the story of the young man in Fort Worth, Texas, and I think he was driving an inebriated with 4 or 5 people, a teenager, and he got off the hood for a while. After he was a student, he didn't know that. So many of our children, it doesn't take a lot of money. If it's money, not how did you get to be the person that you are today? I work with a lot of parents, and I just don't want my kids to have to give them what I want. What's in there? Why would I rob my children of the experiences I've had in life that make me the person that I am? Here's what it's known. This is a part of the white paper. Successful families share common characteristics. They foster good communication and trust. That is the key, communication and trust. One of the things that I do with families,
when they want to do it, I facilitate families through this process. When we're talking about not too long ago, we're sitting there and we do this thing, it's called Stratton, it's a Stratton survey. We do the picture of axis, if you will, and on this side is non-Trump, and on this side is Trump. What do we do on that axis? And then we do the work on the axis. We do this intuitively. And then the top of this axis is, let's say, is the muscle power. A person who is organized, he knows where he's going, he speaks truth, he knows exactly, and he thinks just quote. And then the bottom of this axis is going down in a certain way. Speak of who I am, back to the person. Who is the part of the soul? Then we part. We get into it. And then we do this idea. And we determine what kind of listener are you, what kind of communicator are you, what's your leadership style in this time. I've been doing this with families in my own personal family. And you can think I'm not, but it's kind of hard to think about how I'm going through it. So I brought in some outside person to do this for our family. We did this intuitively. I have to be a persuader now. We have a family life. I've got one son who is a director. We're doing the part of that. Everybody else that placed themselves down here intuitively as allies. I've got one daughter called she is. We paused it on the chart. I said, what do you think? Turned around the bottom, I said, that's not me. She says, in our premarital counseling, I was told that's what I needed to do to communicate this family. I need to go to my husband to talk to this family. We want you to be the person. We want you to be. So then we do something. And my daughter-in-law, she got up here one morning. She turns to my son and says, when she turned to me and said, amen. When she and I, the open communication has just been tremendous since that day. Communication and trust among family members is how harmful it is if we will perpetuate our family values and our family lives together. Shared vision. Meet regularly.
the mode of balanced view of wealth. We talked about it. And keep the business of the family. I work with a lot of families who, some of them are very wealthy, and different members of the family are in the family business. And when they get together, guess what they talk about? We're talking, and what you have to do is, we've got to talk about the business of family, not the family business. Often you get together with family just talking about the business of family. One of the things, if you want to be successful going forward, is we've got to keep the business of the family and the family business separate. You've got to know the roles necessary to be successful. What is my role in this family? All this is covered in a little more detail in the white paper. Inspire families to participate in the family. Well, not all family members want to participate. You need to work with the ones who show up. We do family retreats, family work with the family, where we get everybody together. And some of them, when kids are strange, pardon me, we say, what if they don't show up? And we'll work with the ones who are strange. And after a while, next time we get together, kids begin to talk about it. We work with ones who show up. We actively train and mentor each generation. And a big key, genuinely transfer leadership from one generation to the next. It is so tough for some dads turn loose of control and family. I have to admit, it was tough for me. And they also have ongoing family governance. I tend to have a sense of control in my dad, a sense of control in my family. We go on vacation where I want to go. We do the things I want to do. And I thought, man, this is what we're doing. We're going to go. And it was a big turning point in our family when we started our own personal family with Chris and Gavin's away from the house in a neutral area. And as they're waiting, we went together. We were in charge. And I was sure. I'll pay for it. Our last time together, we were in Mobile, Alabama, Thanksgiving for a week. All my sons, my daughters-in-law, all my grandchildren, everybody, each of us, kids and their wives, each of my sons, their families plan activities for the day. So, plan times together, transfer leadership, mentor the next family, the next generation, plan activities together. We need to pass both the financial and the emotional and the spiritual inheritances on to the next, and we have to do that by building a foundation for both. Effective intergenerational communication is imperative. People have been talking, cornerstone of keeping our families together is effective intergenerational communication. And there are lots of books I can recommend to you on that. Have meaningful and plentiful pre-inheritance experiences. You want to know what your children are going to do with the wealth they leave behind? Give them some of that. A book I recommend is called The Ultimate Gift. It's a story of a rich man. It's a novel. It's a story of a rich man, straight from Belton, Texas, who his sons didn't do very well. And he sees a glimmer of hope in his grandson.
He wants to give a gift. But it's a testimonial gift. And it's called a gift. A gift of love. A gift of friends. A gift of work. A gift of relationships. A gift of volunteering. David wrote that he was my son several years ago. He didn't have much money. The chapter of the gift of something we all do. So when you get to that chapter, you read it. Here's the gift of money. You got to give it away. I'd like you to give it away to someone you don't know. How to do it anonymously. And then I will come up to you on what you need from me to be able to develop. What do you need from me? And what do you think you did for the person in this situation you can work with? And that's a pretty sweet notice for myself. You know that when I got my daughter's mom, later, but your husband, my father-in-law, is awesome. He, for Christmas, he gave us a new life to do his life. So I didn't get a word. He was a joke. He said, look at it. He wants to instruct him. How to get money, how to give money to him. And I expect him to get money. I'm going to close with my passion in just a second. Genuine leadership transfer. We talked about that just a little bit. But that is sometimes the hardest for guys in the room to do, is to give away or to transfer leadership to the next generation and sit back. So what is known? What do your clients, what do donors, what do our friends, what do they want to pass and receive? By the way, that is my grandmother. They want to know the family story. This was interesting to me. 77% of the baby boomers and their parents were the elders. The thing they want more than anything is the family story. What was it like for you growing up? I carry around in my computer a list of questions. Questions like, did I probably sit in a good conversation with this idea? What was the house one night in New York? Did you have a favorite room? Was there a teacher in your life that went about you? Those problems that you had, all you have to do is click them home and start telling your story. If you want a list of questions right now, get a simple list of questions. You just sit and leave those questions in there. Yourself an answer. You will be surprised what it will do for your own children and for your own life. Those memories are there, but you never thought about it in your years. Those teachers in your life, those elders in your life, those ministers in your life, those childhood friends that help make you the person that you are today, that help you become the people that you are. It's your story. Vanderbilt family, when Mr. Vanderbilt died, I think, in 1877, had one of the largest estates in the world. At the time, I think he was worth $105 million. That would be like almost $300 billion today. He died in 1877. They were having a family retreat get together. In 1977, he gave everything he had out right to his kids. 73, they had a meeting. That's the four generations left. There was not a single millionaire in the family. On the other hand, there was the Rothschild family, German family, came out of Germany,
extremely wealthy. In the 1800s, 1700s, 1800s, in the banking business,
they never gave money to the children. They lent money to the children. Through a family bank.
We will have to get it set up in business.
We will pay it back.
They're still meeting. They're still the one of the wealthiest families in our town. Still one of the wealthiest families.
Because they have family governments.
They didn't just give their money to their children, they participated in it. I think every affluent parent wishes they knew how to give their children the hardships and make them rich in life. The question becomes,
do you want to prepare both for your children to grow? Do you want to prepare both, take out all the potholes, all the curves, all the dangers that you can travel through out of your family, having 6 or 7 miles an hour? Or would you rather prepare your children for the road they're going to travel? What would you do to prepare our children, our grandchildren, for the road they're going to travel? I'm passionate about this. I believe in stewardship. For all my life, I learned this, a powerful lesson from my father, who had a self-created education, who had a belief in the same. When I went to Bible school, you know, the program, and looked at all this stuff, I'm looking at the tax return, and his income that year, $3,152. Now, you raise the family back. But I turned it over to the paper Christian Lending Bank. I turned it over to the bank. I had the plan of money. It was a contribution to the local church of $340. That was more than 10% of his gross. That is a just increase. In 1978, I married 7 years ago. I'm not doing that myself. And I'm making 10. Why? Because I carry too much plastic in my life. I like my game only because this stuff is up. I believe if we were to go to my former pastor, son of this church, people were involved in the Liquid Living campaign. I was chair of that. So I had access to a lot of the funds that we did. If I said, if I would stand up today, our congregation said, ask the question, do you believe that we're going to be good stewards of what God has provided to us? And what can we do to any of this? Would you stand up? So I went down and just stand up. Because I believe. If you practice it, you might stand it. 3% of them sit down. Some of them spend more on their lunch on Sunday than they give to church and work. If you believe it, yes, practice it. You see, I like to take that a step further. When we arrive in this world, we arrive to make it. We have a nickel to our money. And if we have a nickel, we're going to have a bucket to pay for it. But when we leave this earth, and we will, we will not get to save it. Whether we leave behind $100 or $100 million, I can care less. We will have it because God gave us the ability. My favorite saying is, if you're not with just two suits of clothes, you're not going to wear your suit to suit somebody else in one day in one suit. One suit will be your own. But I will have two suits because God gave me one day to come. Do I have any stewardship responsibility for the kingdom before I leave? And you don't have a plan for us. Take care of your own. anyway. Does that mean they get it all? Well, my kids, well, my children are going to spend my life. What if they don't believe? What if they don't believe that God didn't send them, but they leave behind it, or people, wherever you live, whether it's Christian education, your walkers, or missions? What if it's not? What's my intent to be right for the people in the next 15, 20 years? We have more than enough without every institution to do all that we need to do in our lives. So what are we? What plans do we have for the team that allows you to do? What plans are you making for the third, fourth, fifth generation? Do they know your story? Do they know the things that you matter most? Your relationship with Christ. Your relationship with the church. Will you let me know the name of the great way to live in the name of the Lord? Who's that? If you were here with me, there's probably some questions you'd like to ask us. Guess what? Your great great grandchildren will want to know those same things about you. Is it not your story? What is your story? They do it today. Do they know it? And I said, my kids know my story. If you ever play that platform game and stand around and start with a whisper here and have families around, who do you want to tell your story? I mean, you really go over it. Tell me your own story.
Put pictures to it.
My story so far is about 98 pages. My kids have read it. I said, "Dad, but you went back this far, so I'm just going to have you go back." If you're interested,
so what's your legacy? Who will tell your story if not you, then who?
If you contact me, there's a place we would have on the ACU Foundation, but also I have a family called Care for You. And we have a contract with an organization called Family Heart, where you can go in and fill up your school, put up your own pictures. And it's not likely that where it belongs to somebody else, it's your information. It's you do your own password, you pay for your own lay off, and find your own phone number, and you can do it.
Right here, that this Garrett D at ACU.edu, email, I'll send it to you. It'll be a PDF to the computer after one day. On the computer. For a long time, right after the same time, you had to train like that. But you want to keep up with it. My son is 41, and then my middle son will be 40 in July. We're 7 months apart. My youngest son is 30. And it's probably been the last 4 or 5 years that one of my sons is and so we started asking questions a few years ago about where we go, long run up here, we have this and that, and so we didn't get a ship. And I don't mind telling you what my statement is. Most of my wealth that I have is in 401Ks, or 403Bs, and IRAs. I have a home, I have some other things. I have a vintage 1964 Dodge Journal. I have a house and I'm buying out of it. I have a lot of wealth. But if all my taxes, the things that I bought, they will be taxable to my children. I don't have an estate tax problem, but I will have an income tax problem if I give my kids my power and my board will be there. What can happen if I do? There's all right now in Washington. You used to be able to, you can depend upon another, but it's what it's called a stretch out on your IRAs for the life of your children. But there's all. It's pretty close that I think will happen. They're going to force you to take it. If you do that, and then you can stretch out on your IRAs, you want to take that for 5 years. You've got to plan a tax, income tax. Unless it's a law. So what happens with the things that are subject to income tax? I place into a charitable remainder trust of my debt. A trust that is tax exempt. And it will pay income to my 3 sons and their families for a term of 20 years. At the end of the day, if they have money, they're not going to have money. At that point, whatever's in there, whether it's $100, those are the children's lives. So I started talking to them. I started answering the question. I started talking to them about it. And they began to question. And they did. I talked.
If they had asked,
I would answer. I would not want to give them more information than they. I don't want my children to think that they don't, because they don't really understand me. I'm not going to give up on you. And it's still a lesson. And they don't say they don't get something, but they don't understand. Inherited wealth. 17 days is the average time that a child or someone inherits wealth will purchase something they could not otherwise afford. I serve this example of one of those states. I have been measured by people. When do I get my money? I've already borrowed the money. I purchased this asset. I need to pay the money back and give me my inheritance. I put all these expenses away. I did a tax year. I made sure we don't have any more taxes.
Question. In your book, did you focus on financial strategies?
Not so much on financial
strategies.
I tell people you need to sit with the book. I call it the central documents. Will. That
that's your investment. And you need enough trust that you own assets in another state other than the state in which you reside. You don't want to have to go through probate in two states. So I own it. We own a timeshare in Florida, but it's the title of that timeshare is in the trust in Texas, because I don't want to have to go through probate in Florida. So we need wills. Occasionally, we need trust. We need powers of attorney. What is a power of attorney? That's something that's a document that allows someone else to do business with you in the event that you do not temporarily or permanently impress them. Power of attorney. Someone who has an attorney can act in your life. Healthcare power of attorney. Someone who can make healthcare decisions for you. Pardon. That's a biggie. A fourth one is, I call it the big shadow line. Record your position, so I call it a living will. It allows someone, if you are brain dead, you will never do that, never commit an action. Give somebody permission to become a living will. I have to be able to say it. I'm a study of those. Thank you.